Hey, everybody. Today's edition of the Around the NFL podcast is presented by Rocket Mortgage. Join Rocket Mortgage in saying thank you to essential workers by posting a video to everyoneknowsahero.com. Everyoneknowsahero.com. Do it. Welcome to the show, Rocket Mortgage, and let's get to it. It's Monday football talk time.
The Around the NFL podcast have been overrun by their own children.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, coming to you from a city filled with heroes in bunkers. Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Hey. Hope everybody enjoyed the holiday weekend. Easter, Passover, everybody fly.
Very nice Sunday Easter in the Sessler household. A little bit different than the other wall-to-wall 24/7 exposure that I have with my family, nonstop, never ending, don't get 1 second to myself scenario. It was quite peaceful and enjoyable.
We fast-tracked. Jack doesn't have his own bike, or he didn't. And we were going to give him one with the training wheels and everything for his birthday in August. But given the situation, fast track that. He got it from the Easter Bunny yesterday morning. He was on fire. He couldn't believe it. Because he was just talking about how he wanted a bike, and bang, Easter Bunny, you know, hits it out of the park. Who's plugged in? The Easter Bunny, who's a great dad, the Easter Bunny, and the mommy. Anyway, so I get to go driving around. I have a bike. I forgot about it. It was the one, Mark. We come from such humble beginnings, Mark, with this company, that I didn't even have a car when we started at the NFL, and I used to have to ride my bike to get to work. That thing was in the back of the garage. Brought it out, dusted it off, got the tarantulas off it, pumped up the tires with some air, and we're riding around the neighborhood, and it feels good. It feels good to be out there.
Yeah, I feel like that bike, my earlier memories of that bike would be that we'd occasionally, when we were on the edit desk, go down to the Irish Times, or we'd go down to Jocks or Dailies after work, and, you know, it would stretch on to 7 or 8 at night. And one night Dan was singing karaoke with a big black backpack, and then left into the middle of the night to drive his bike home. But, you know, he'd had a few beers, would be safe to say. And, about 45 minutes later, I got I didn't know Emily, his wife, very well at all. And she texted me very concerned about Dan's whereabouts because he hadn't arrived back home yet. So I don't know what happened in the interim there, Dan, or if you were just lagging.
I think I just wasn't in touch the way I needed to be on that night. And when I got back home, it was like I was 16 again. And the parents had caught me coming home from a party. That's funny. That's one thing that bonds us in our time, Mark. I have gotten messages from your wife as well. Where is
yes,
Mark?
You have.
Is he okay? I need your help. So
I'd prefer we don't dig too deep into the topic.
Not necessary, but it just goes to show we got each other's backs, and that's a good thing. All right, guys and gal, how are you, Ricky?
Doing well. How are you guys?
Good. You look fresh faced. Did you get a nice relaxing weekend?
I did. Yeah, I felt good. I can't believe it's already Monday again, though. You know?
Yeah, on Friday we had the first Around the NFL Twitter show from the bunker, and I thought it went really well. If you didn't check it out, you should, because it essentially is us, you know, not being reined in by any of the corporate giant. We were able to talk. Wes, you could speak on this because I know you air that frustration sometimes when we do some other stuff on network and whatnot. The Twitter show is very close, almost an identical twin brother to the audio show.
Yes, I felt like for the first time since we've been on, like, kind of a strictly run camera operation, we were allowed to approach it the same way we do the podcast, which is, you know, we like to say we've got good chemistry, but that chemistry isn't there if everyone is on cue and scripted. That has to happen. It has to flow naturally, organically. And I felt like that happened on the Twitter show.
And here's the good news. The show is coming back every Friday through the draft. So make sure you check it out on Friday, and we'll be promoting that. And it's run by the NFL handle is tweeting it out. So that's the reach. Greg, that's the reach you're looking for on social.
I'm the social master. It's really all I care about these days. I'm just on the gram checking out IG. You know, that's just, I love those rap battles. Hey, You know, love the DJ.
You're a
battle.
Constant presence on Instagram, and maybe to the point where I'd ask you to tone it down just a little bit.
I'm like sometimes like, hey Wes, off TikTok already, bro.
I've never been on TikTok. It wasn't until I think a month or two ago that I heard of TikTok. Mm.
Mark and I were way into Vine back in the day.
Oh, we had a few. Like there Vine. Were a few accounts that we tracked very closely. Let's put it that way.
All right. Today's show. I'm excited. We got Andrew Marchand coming on from the New York Post. He is the sports media reporter / watchdog. He has been taking us every step of the way through the machinations connected to this great drama at ESPN with Monday Night Football. So we're going to talk to Andrew about what's going on with that booth, who's going to be in it in 2020, who's not in the booth, and why aren't they? Looking forward to talking to Andrew. But before we do that, let us get caught up with some news.
Every day now that I wake up, that we're out here at our house and thinking about what's happening and what's going to happen, and it gets harder. It gets a little harder every day because I think less about myself than the people I care for.
Oh, I'm sure.
And my hair. My hair is looking. I can't get my hair cut anymore. I start self-cutting my hair, maybe. But anyway.
Speaking of social media and Instagram, Mark, you've been way plugged in on Alec Baldwin's ongoing meltdown connected to COVID-19.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's another thing that I'm invested in because I think that you, Dan, are interested in it, too, because it was another text that I sent unreplied to yesterday to our group where, and I get it, it's the middle of Easter morning, and I found time to peruse Alec Baldwin's rather sort of daily IGTV deep dive where he seems to be claims to be in a bathroom. It looks like any bigger than any room in my house. And he just goes on these dizzying rants. And like the one you heard, he had a very nice thought about the people around him. And then he cannot help but fade into what seemed like an internal thought or two about his hair. And that's sort of the vibe of the overall production. I enjoy them. His ego is immense, and he brings a lot to the table.
That and like the blanket of depression. If you just want to put that over you, if you want to just like put that over you for the rest of the day. Like, here's Alec Baldwin's depression. He's trying to get rid of it to his viewers.
I've said on the show in the past that I've always viewed Alec Baldwin as my celebrity spirit animal, and I'm rewatching 30 Rock right now, and it all checks out. I think his behavior might be similar to what mine would be if I were extremely rich and had a big mansion and nothing to do. Yeah. So I don't have any of those things, but if I did, I could see my behavior being very similar to current day Baldwin. All right. Let's get into it. Let's do some news. Keep those Baldwin news drops coming because I feel like he speaks for all of us in a lot of ways.
No doubt.
All right. Christian McCaffrey got paid. This is Adam Schefter of ESPN had it. It is a 4-year contract extension worth $16 million a year. So 4 for $64. I don't know if that is the actual value of the deal. Probably isn't, but he gets paid. And it's very interesting the timing here, Greg, because as we all know, running backs that get paid typically haven't been working out. Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell, it goes on. And yet the Panthers decide after an offseason where we heard some whispers that they might even move McCaffrey instead, they lock him down. Your thoughts?
And there's no point making a comment on the money because the details are now. It's a 4-year extension, which means he still has the year of his rookie deal still to tack onto that. But he's no average running back. Like, great players, if you have a top 5 player at the position, it gives you an advantage. I don't care what position you're playing. People are going to make all these opinions. Oh, $16 million a year. Let's see what the guaranteed money is. I suspect it's not like outrageous and that it's more like a 2, maybe a 3-year deal where you still have some of his rookie contract. Why not? He is a huge advantage in the passing game.
First thing I thought of was that little skit we did a couple years ago. Can Christian McCaffrey run through the, what was it? Run through tackles or run up
between
the middle?
The tackles,
run between the. Yeah, well, he's answered that one. And I don't even know if that matters as much as it did 10 or 15 years ago, whether you can run between the tackles. He's the prototype for where the position is going in the future, where he's just like a rocked up slot receiver who can also play running back. And that probably will go great with the new head coach, Matt Rhule, and his offense with Joe Brady there. So to me, he's the new face of the franchise. Luke Kuechly's retired. Cam Newton is out of there. And this is Christian McCaffrey's team.
Yeah, I think it's interesting just to kind of monitor every transaction that comes out of Carolina, because it's another puzzle piece in what Matt Rhule, who I think is going to be a different thinking type of head coach, wants to do with this roster. And there were whispers about basically anyone being available in Carolina, and that, you know, there was some little chatter that maybe even Christian McCaffrey could be moved. And this is a decisive slap down to that development. And he's part of the, he's 23. I get that these running back contracts are going to be looked at sideways, but he's not 26 or 27. I mean, I don't have a problem with the deal.
Listeners may or may not be aware that Teddy Bridgewater averaged less than 6 air yards per attempt last season in his time with the Saints, which included a handful of starts. Well, you know, it helps when you have the best receiving running back in the league there for a guy that might like to check it down a lot and keep it a little more conservative. So if you're a little nervous about Teddy and whether he's able to open it up on offense and drive the ball and really move it offense, well, if he's going to be conservative by nature, he has the best guy possible as a kind of safety valve in Christian McCaffrey.
He also might not be the quarterback, and almost certainly won't be the quarterback by the time Christian McCaffrey's contract is up. I mean, this still very much feels
like he'll be the quarterback this year, though, right?
He will be, but he might be battling, you know, Tua or Justin Herbert or Love, or who knows. I think the Panthers are a reasonable possibility to take a quarterback early.
All right, in other news, the NFL draft, we already know it's going to be a much different affair. It was originally supposed to be, going to be filled with glitz and glamour in Las Vegas, all wiped away by the dreaded COVID-19. So what is it instead? We knew it was going to be a quote-unquote virtual affair. Head masks, headgear, mid-90s Skinemax fair? No, a little bit different. It's going to be done in the homes of the various decision-makers across the league. Roger Goodell is going to be stationed in the basement, and I bet it's a nice basement, by the way. It's not like your basement. In his Westchester County home outside of New York City, and it's going to be an ESPN and NFL network joint affair across both networks. So it's going to be different, Mark Sessler, much different. And because of the nature and the limitations, ESPN and NFL are working together as opposed to having two separate broadcasts. They're going to combine the telecast. I don't know if you remember this, Mark. Maybe you were a little older because you were a little older than me, but the cartoon All-Stars Against Drugs in the early 90s, they simulcast a cartoon half-hour special or an hour-long special in about 1992 or so. And they
combined... personally do not remember that, okay. But it sounds like a nice show.
Greg's in my age range, but I know he wasn't around in 1992. they combined all the top cartoon stars of the day into one show and then told everybody not to smoke weed, basically.
The Laugh That's Olympics. What it feels like to me. You're talking about the Laugh Olympics?
Not the Laugh
That's
Olympics.
That's different.
It's the I feel cartoon like All-Stars to the Rescue, I think it was.
Dan, I think if anything, their message was largely ignored by most of the country.
Yeah, I don't think the Really Rottens were on board with that message, Greg.
Yeah, the Laugh Olympics was great. I was a big fan.
Anyway, we're all whiffing on our pop culture references right now, but let's just say that it is going to look and sound a lot different. The NFL announced those details, so get ready, people.
It's just amazing it's happening. I mean, the NFL is lucky how the whole schedule played out, and people were upset that they did free agency at the time. And I know we're only a month removed, not even. I think it makes sense now in retrospect because no one knows when anything is going to be close to back to normal. And now the NFL draft is literally the only meaningful sporting event, I guess outside of WrestleMania, if you want to count that, but that's entertainment. That's going to take place for a matter of 3 or 4 months. And you know, it's given people something to look forward to. We're only 10 days away.
And no reason you can't do. I mean, the draft essentially has been a remote operation for 32 teams. Anyways, when we used to go to Radio City Music Hall, there'd be like two jabronis from each club sitting there with a phone, taking a phone call from the war room. So it should go off without a hitch mostly. I feel bad a little bit for some of the people that spent, like a guy like Charles Davis, who spent, you know, a year studying prospects and is no longer part of the production. But that's just the cost of trying to mash two groups together.
I like the idea that all these GMs have one IT person in their houses, in their homes.
Bless you, Ricky.
Bless you, Ricky.
muted.
You know,
let's
we on
be
our
a
live
professional.
Twitter show,
how about
this? You know, during the live Twitter show, we got a dog barking coming from our producer's apartment, and now we have a live, you know, an on-air sneeze. There is a mute button.
I guess I was muted, and so I clicked it. I clicked it, but I unmuted myself. So
nailed it.
You should probably be tested.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Wes. Finish that point. Sorry.
I like the idea that all these GMs have an IT person in their house, and I'm reading in Peter King's column about Thomas Dimitrov's making sure this guy only uses the side exit, is in no other rooms of the house. They're treating them like it's an espionage. Like they're in undercover, these IT guys.
Just put them in like hazmat suits.
Yeah, you know, they're not going to be allowed to see anything.
They're all head to toe yellow with the big headpiece and the mask, the plastic mask in the front. Just go for it.
And I get
blindfold.
I get people are all worried about like the cameras and how the production's going to be or whatever. But like every pick has always been made, as Mark said, by telephone. Anyways, if they want to call, it's not like they were doing it on Slack in the past. It's like Thomas Dimitrov will call Bill Belichick and they'll work out a trade. Like it really isn't that different than it is normally.
I will be tracking one thing. I mean, if you're Goodell, you know that you're going to get highly, scrutinized for the backgrounds. Like we've all got these backgrounds behind us. And if you're in your Goodell basement, what's it going to look like? Is he going to go out of his way to remove maybe extremely expensive vases and things that people would get on people's radar?
Or like an old like Rush concert poster?
Sure. Anything that might have people turn sideways. I want to know the process.
I have to say this. I mean, we've worked at NFL Network for a long time, and it's a bummer from the vantage point of we have all these great people that put together the draft coverage and can execute it from the research team to our on-air talent people. That's going to be different this year. But purely as a fan, it will be kind of an interesting show to watch just how it unfolds and kind of the mystery of what can happen, what can go wrong. That kind of end of it is something that will make it a little bit more intriguing than other drafts.
Well, and more than that, it's a show to watch. It's a live show to watch. You know, I know like people are like watching NBA players play horse from their basement, but there's like a level of desperation there I'm not ready for. Like this is an actual big time live television event that's actually going to happen, which is nice.
All right. In other news, as happens every time around this year, the competition committee works together on potential rule changes. So each team has the opportunity to make proposals that they send to the competition committee. And then the committee works together on whether or not to implement that rule into the book for the new season. And we can go through a few of them right now. One that's kind of a highlight for me here is a potential quote unquote Bill Belichick rule. Wes, I know you love this stuff. They could look to close a loophole that Belichick first used against the Jets in that grisly Monday night blowout by New England in week 6, I want to say, where they took multiple procedure penalties in a row to just wind down clock time to end that ugly affair. And then ironically,
what a game that was a great night.
Yeah, I want to talk about my favorite game. Another great night was the Saturday night of the wild card playoffs when Mike Vrabel of the Titans used that against Belichick when it really counted and he needed those seconds and used it against Bill, his old protege. So the league, that's one of the rule proposals to change that situation so you can't run off double the time on penalties you're committing on purpose. That seems like a no-brainer.
Well, it fails two rules. It fails the common sense rule. By common sense, it shouldn't be allowed in the game. And the second rule, is the sport better for it or worse? The sport is worse for it, so take it out. It's no surprise that Belichick was looking for a loophole. His one idol in the NFL is Paul Brown, who spent most of his career thinking up new ways to get around rules, bend rules. I mean, that's the history of sports in this country, really.
Hmm. Farewell, time-chewing loophole.
Right.
Thank you.
That's gone, but probably the biggest news for me out of this was the competition committee didn't even bring back the pass interference replay for a vote. So it's just gone. It was on for 1 year on the books. It was a trial basis and they're not even going to have the owners vote on it when they meet again, which is scheduled for mid to late May. It's just off the books. I mean, it's unofficial, I guess, but that is gone.
Well, that was the one smart thing that they did when they instituted the rule, was they gave themselves that out. It was like, it is not a forever rule. It's a 1 year trial run. And obviously it did not work out well. So I don't think anybody's really crying about that. Common sense wins again. Here's a few other ones that are out there. The Eagles, they've made quite a few proposals. They want to modify the blindside block rule to prevent unnecessary fouls. That popped up a couple times. Most notably, Cody Ford of the Bills was called for an illegal blindside block on a 3rd and 9 when the Bills had the ball in Texans territory in overtime of that crazy wild card game. The 15-yard penalty knocked the Bills out of field goal range. And effectively, that was their last best chance to win the game. So a lot of these times, same thing with the Nickel Roby Coleman non-PI, phantom PI call that led to the PI rule. Sometimes it's a high visibility play in the playoffs that leads to these things. The Eagles also want to make permanent the expansion of automatic replay reviews to include scoring plays and turnovers negated by a foul, as well as any successful or unsuccessful try attempt. They also want to, we talked about the onside kick rule that the Eagles proposed that would allow a team who's trailing in the game an opportunity to maintain possession after scoring. For example, the team trailing could attempt a 4th and 15 from their own 25-yard line. We saw that used in the Pro Bowl. Any thoughts on that stuff, guys?
No.
No, Philly would also wants to bring back overtime as a 15-minute affair. Back in 2017, the owners approved shortening it down to 10 minutes, but Philly saying it was better the old way. The Dolphins also proposed an option for the defense for the game clock to start on the referee's signal. The defense declines an offensive penalty that occurs late in either half. That is the Belichick rule, right? Is that what that is?
No, it's kind of like a close cousin to it that you're getting an advantage by having a penalty. I don't think that Eagles overtime rule, unless I'm crazy. I feel like the overtime rule is popular inside the league and out. And I feel like they're on an island there trying to go back to the old overtime. At least I hope they are.
And finally, the Ravens and Chargers have proposed to add a, quote, booth umpire as an 8th game official to the officiating crew, add a senior technology advisor. Seems like always good to have a senior technology advisor in modern times to the referee to assist the officiating crew. So all those are up for vote. The owners meetings, which were supposed to happen last month, are now pushed and scheduled for what, next month?
There's one scheduled for May, mid-May in Marina Del Rey. We will see if that happens or if they try to do it by phone or what they decide to do.
All right. Finally, in the news, yes, whenever a member of the Greybeards comes off the roster, it's like that with a teacher. They could say all the kids are the same, but they're not all the same. Some you love and they stick with you. And for me, that was Roosevelt Nix, the fullback, the only fullback, in fact, on NFL.com's own website for top available free agents. It was just Roosevelt Nix under the fullback category. So I knew it was only a matter of time before he went elsewhere. And he does go to the Indianapolis Colts on a 1 year deal. So Rosie Nix.
I'd have to ask you, you're as someone who's functioning high up in the, you're actually created the team. Does it change the way you run your offense? You're pulling a fullback out. If you have a fullback, it tells us something about your playbook, but he's gone. He's out.
Well, as I've said, that once a graybeard, always a graybeard. So it doesn't change this roster. But I guess it's just a little ping of, oh, wow, he's moving on in another way as well to a real team. So it's just the way it is. And again, very different this offseason. Nix is one of the only guys on this entire roster of really quality players still without a job. One of these guys going to sign? What's going to happen? I guess we got to wait for COVID-19 to go away. A lot of big names still out.
You have to find someone else to take those 4 imaginary fullback snaps away from your roster.
Anyway, good for you, Rosie Nix. Get that real money. That's what's happening. In the news.
Or is it? Do we have a little breaking news, Erica? Tom Pelissero reports the NFL and NFLPA have reached agreement that a voluntary offseason program, including some virtual training and virtual practices, is going to start in April 20th, a couple weeks. But probably the key item here is that no team will be allowed to go back onto the field until all 32 facilities are able to be opened. So it's basically saying, yeah, it's a good rule, but basically no one is allowed to practice until all 32 states or 32 teams rather are like back on the field.
And why is that notable? Name an area of the country that has not been hit hard by COVID-19. If that country, the area of the country has a football team there, they can't get a jump start while the Jets and Giants, as an example, are still completely, you know, dealing with all the mayhem that COVID-19 is presenting. So that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I don't know what virtual training is. That seems like
I mean, classroom stuff. Like basically they're doing the classroom stuff that they would do in the facility where they're meeting with their position coach and going over some playbook stuff.
It links the NFL into political circles as much as it's ever been, because you're going to have certain governors, I mean, for very good reasons, simply refusing to open anything up in certain states where others are going to push, and you're going to have, there will be, you know, the NFL's not going to be able to control that at all. I think it's a fascinating time. And I the idea that they're going to like open things up in a couple months to me seems, does anyone feel that that's just wildly,
well, I don't think
wildly impossible right now.
I don't think there's any expectation that anyone's practicing before training camp. So yes, they're not going to announce, and this is about the offseason program, to be clear. This is only about the OTA mini camp period. And yeah, to answer your question, Mark, it would be shocking if anyone is practicing any OTAs or mini camps.
If the NFLPA is like the rest of society, they're going to point out after this is over, see, we can virtually do all this stuff. We don't have to be, we don't have to gather each April to do this.
Yep.
Fair point. Same thing about going into the office. Let's just, you know.
Yep.
Exactly. Well,
my kids have to go back to daycare, but
that part is essential. Get the kids
back to school.
The pod could use a little in person. We can stand to be together.
I still, adults stay out of pants. Kids go back to school.
Yeah. Dan will be in Westchester, New York in 6 months if this continues.
All right, let us move on. All right, it's the man, really the greatest journalist in the history of the Around the NFL podcast. I feel like that's the way we got to set this up, because we talk about almost every article that rolls out from the New York Post sports media guy, Andrew Marchand. First of all, let's start right there. The New York Post. Andrew Marchand. Now, I thought it was Marchand initially, and as a New York guy, I had for years thought that it was Marchand. Wes piped in and said, no, he thought it would have been Marchand. He might have heard it. Please settle it right now on the Around the NFL podcast.
Well, I know this has been a huge debate on the podcast. My brother, Michael, he's a huge fan of your podcast, so he's been giving me the updates of how to say our last name. My brother's one of the he's like the George Steinbrenner fantasy football players. He'll, you know, outspend anybody. So he's been updating me. He listens to you guys religiously. Like literally, he listens every week. So he knows every joke, sandwich jokes. He updated me. So I'm ready for this podcast. It's Marchand is how you say our last name.
No.
So I guess you're 0-4. You know, I'll tell man. You what sandwich I want.
That is unbelievable. I don't even know. I'm like, I don't know. I'm flustered right now that was somehow we still got it wrong.
You know what? It really should be like March and it really should be SH. I'll give you that. The French is Marchand. We have French cousins. So if you said it like Marchand, I'll give you that. But people have been getting it wrong forever.
All right. Well, we have that
fair enough
settled at least. So, Andrew, like I said, there's one thing about, and your brother knows this, we are obsessed with the soap opera around Monday Night Football and what's going on in that booth. And your reporting has been stellar for a long time now. I mean, I feel like you've been ahead of the curve on this, and people are kind of following your reporting to find out what's going on. The latest, of course, was Drew Brees, that ESPN had an eye on him for after his retirement, that he would slide in to the booth. But it turns out, based on your reporting late last week, that he is actually going now to NBC after his retirement, maybe setting up with Notre Dame, getting some reps there, and then maybe replacing Chris Collinsworth down the road. So just in terms of an overview, in the saga of Monday Night Football, what what has made this so interesting to you and something that is important to report on in this media sphere as you've gone along through the weeks and months of this?
All right, well, first of all, let me just correct you. None of this is important. And so, no, obviously you guys like it a lot. I love it as well. Listen, when you look at Monday Night Football, it's been around for half a century, and that booth is one of the historic booths in the history of sports casting, which is a big deal. And I mean, when people, you know, I'm joking about it not being important, but, you know, these ESPN pays nearly $2 billion to broadcast the games each season. And these announcers make millions of dollars, and people have a lot of opinions on it. So it is interesting, especially to an audience like yours, football audience, especially for Monday night, because even though the ESPN hasn't been getting the best games, that booth is the most scrutinized in largely, I think, because if you look at like a Sunday afternoon in your local market, a lot of times you like your local team, or you have Red Zone, or you have the Sunday package where you can watch your team. So you're focused on that. On Mondays, it's the end of the fantasy weekend. You might have that still in play. But then you're really into the game, and maybe you have a bet on it. But the and then if it's a bad game, the announcers become more to the forefront. So I think for that reason, guys like Joe Tess and Booger McFarlane, there's a lot of pressure on that booth, even if the games aren't as big. So I think you look at the history, and I think they've really lacked some success. And the Boogermobile a couple of years ago was one of the worst ideas in the history of ideas. So that's what made it really a fascinating story.
And Peyton Manning was also a part of this. My favorite twist so far, by the way, was Romo re-ups with CBS, and ESPN was hot for Romo, but CBS did what they had to do to keep him. They pivot at the dream Peyton Manning, Al Michaels pairing is what ESPN, according to reports, they had their eye on. They got turned down twice there, right? Like, was with the Al Michaels situation, was that ever something that was close to happening, where he would jump ship from Sunday Night Football and jump networks from NBC to ESPN? And this Peyton Manning thing, at what point does someone in your position, Andrew, get to stop reporting about Peyton Manning being in the booth? Because Peyton Manning doesn't want to be in the booth.
It's a couple of things there. So ESPN did think there was a path to Peyton and Al as a combination. I think the two, Al Michaels likely wouldn't go to ESPN unless there was a marquee guy next to him. And Peyton Manning's about as big as you can get in terms of names and potentially, developing to a big booth. So the way it could have possibly worked is that, Al only has two more years left on his contract. Mike Tirico's already signed there. Al Michaels is a legend in the booth. He'll be 77 after these 2 years, which includes a Super Bowl 2 years from now. He doesn't have any plans to retire. So, could there be something worked out where he went to ESPN if they had the right analyst? I think that's possible. There's a history there. Of course, he was at Monday Night Football forever. And then as far as Peyton Manning's concerned, yeah, you're 100% right. Like, until proven otherwise, he doesn't want to do it. The money, I don't think they offered him, from what I was told, money, but it was $10-plus million. And again, Peyton Manning doesn't have to do it. He's made more than $250 million on the field, and who knows how much off of it. So he doesn't need to broadcast. And it is a time commitment for a guy like him. For normal people, work 4 months, 5 months, 3 days a week, including travel, and then just doing 3-hour game. That's not a lot, but that disrupts his life. They can't really tell him who the play-by-play guy is. And you guys know, the Mannings want everything perfect. And so it's hard to believe he's going to do it at any point, but he's only going to do it if it's the right thing. Like, everything's exactly lines up.
You reported on Breeze, and I wonder, have ESPN, NBC or ESPN, when they were involved, been given any idea that it's just going to be 1 year until he's in the booth? Because Sean Payton kind of hinted maybe he's only back for 1 year, but the contract's for 2 years. And it's almost like this broadcast deal almost makes it seem like they're announcing Drew Brees' retirement for Drew Brees.
Yeah, most people feel like it's going to be 1 year. And I saw what Sean Payton said, and that's what kind of TV execs think. But then, like you just said, he has a 2-year contract. They do well, or he wants to play another year. I mean, I don't think there's anything precluding him from doing that. So I think this contract will be waiting for him whenever he retires from football. So it's interesting. I do think Drew was smart to make the deal now, because See, the thing is about Tony Romo that people maybe don't understand, let's say $180 million is a ridiculous sum. And however you look at it, even after I explain all this, you're going to say, yeah, that's a ridiculous sum. So I'm not trying to convince you $180 million makes sense. But the reason it happened is because everything broke right for Tony Romo, especially the fact that, number one, CBS has a Super Bowl next year. So it's important to have your booth correct going to that. But more importantly, number two is, which I probably should have put number two, number one, if it's more important. But anyway, more importantly is that the NFL deals are up. And so going into those contract negotiations, all these companies, their television is built around the NFL. It's when you look at the top 50 programs, almost every single one of them are NFL games. And so they want to have the best chance to continue with the NFL. And so that's why Romo, everything went exactly right. I don't think people are going to be making $18 million. You know, will it go up a little bit? You know, Troy makes about 6.5 to 7.5. Will he get the 10 eventually? Maybe, but he's not getting 18. I really, really doubt.
ESPN seems to be throwing some big numbers around at unproven guys. Do you sense this is more about the fact that they are not impressed with anybody currently analyzing games on Sundays, or is it more about just needing the big name?
Yeah, I think that's a little bit of a misnomer, because I think when you look at the Romo negotiations now, they were prepared to offer him $140 million over 10 years, which is a crazy amount. And obviously they got CBS had a higher offer at $180 million. For Manning, I know there's a report saying that they were going to offer him $20 million. That's from everything I reported upon. That's not true, that they were only going to go maybe 12 to 14. I say only, but that's still a lot of money. Don't get me wrong. For Drew Brees, now you got to understand about the Brees. ESPN could have had Drew Brees. His side presented ESPN with a contract offer that I believe was for $10 plus million. And they said no, because Drew Brees is unproven. So they were in the $6.5 million range. So they could have this wrapped up, but you know, we're in the middle of a pandemic. I just reported today, you know, ESPN has some guys like Stephen A. Smith and Scott Van Pelt. They're some of their highest earners. They've asked them to take 15% pay cuts for the next 3 months. And so you add all that up and, you know, they're going to try to be smart about it. And I think when you look at it, yeah, it looks like ESPN has gone 0-for-4. But if you look at each circumstance, you can understand why they didn't get each guy. The only guy you could say, no, they could have had him was Drew Brees. And again, to me, yeah, Drew Brees could be really good, but he's never done it. And, you know, I'm not sure. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people in TV, you know, do the producers, broadcasters, and some think he'll be really good. Some aren't as sure. I do think NBC has given him a good game plan. Do Notre Dame, do the pregame show. That's a big hand I put on the video. You can't see it on the podcast, but I just put it right in front of the camera right here. It's a nice ramp they've given him, that he can improve with Notre Dame and then also do the pregame show and then possibly be ready to do Sunday Night Football and potentially a Super Bowl.
I was doing a little bit of homework on you, Andrew, and not that you would remember this, but we crossed paths briefly at Ithaca College in 1993 when I was there for 3 months at the Park School. And that's journalism school, if you're wondering. And my lack of ability to stay there for more than 3 months definitely shows on this show itself. But I would ask you this, because like looking at what you've been through in your own career, Dan would love this. You've had minor run-ins with Don Imus, who called you a moron and a mental patient. You've clashed with Mike and the Mad Dog. And speaking of Al Michaels, I read that you were in a bit of a feud with Al Michaels for a bit there.
Yeah.
You're a man after our own heart, Andrew.
Yeah, those are all true. Although Al likes me now. It's kind of funny. Yeah, there was a long time where Al really we had a face-to-face, did not like me. I reported a lot about when he first went to NBC, the contract of Monday Night Football, he kind of backed out of, and then he wanted a private jet. Yeah, yada, yada. Al and I are good, so maybe I should keep it low. So anyways, recently I just did a big article about the 40th anniversary of Do You Believe Miracles? And Al was nice enough to give me an hour and 15 minutes of his time. And afterward, he sent me an email saying he's never gotten such a great reaction to a story, and his daughter was crying. And I emailed him back. We've come a long way.
Back on the good list.
And then, you know,
yes. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that me being on this podcast, and I think Mark, same thing, Mike and the Mad Dog were so important growing up in the Northeast to us. It was, I felt like I don't know. I was torn in two directions when you were reporting on Francesa's failed app and you were hitting all the beats on the reporting and you were accurate in it. And then you were clearly hurting the big man and you were taking him down. It was like watching Godzilla get shot down at the end of the movie. So I want to commend you for the reporting on Francesa, despite him getting upset. But also it does hurt because Francesa was something of an idol growing up. Mixed emotions on this side of the mic.
Well, you know, and I listened to Mike and Chris growing up too. You know, my brother, who I mentioned earlier, was at college and my dad would be working. I'd come, you know, my mom and I would have dinner and I'd put WFAN on and we'd listen to it the whole time. And then I'd say to my mom, oh, nice conversation we had. At the end. So Mike and Chris, and the run in I had, I was a very young guy when that happened. I was like 24 and they basically sandbagged me. It worked out. I really wish I had a tape of that. Honestly, that would have been, because I think I held my own, but I was a 23-year-old in the middle of like the New York Post newsroom and they're like screaming at me. And I'm pretty sure I kept my composure pretty well, but like, someone like one of the women over from like the entertainment section like came over. What are you doing? And then like this guy Anthony Stabile, who's a big track guy, was like, he's out with Mike and the Mad Dog. So it was fun. I think it's an honor though. You know, I'm just calling me a moron, a mental patient. I mean, come on, is there a higher honor in radio than that?
I don't think good. So. Finally, before we say goodbye, Andrew Marchand.
Marchand.
There you go.
Marchand.
Yeah, Marchand.
Okay. How do you think this ends up?
Week one. It doesn't matter.
It's week one. Let's all hope and pray that football and life is returning to normal by September, and we're playing. What is the booth for Monday Night Football when they have their first game? That doubleheader, customary doubleheader on the first Monday of the season.
I'm going to give you one booth because that second booth, I mean, come on. Who knows?
Yeah, forget about the second booth.
Maybe they'll bring back Greeny and Golick, which I'm sure you guys love that booth. Oh, yeah. Or Berman doing the play-by-play.
Now, big bell bottom.
There's another one, actually. Chris Berman, I haven't had a little run. I loved when I was a kid, but when I was older, it didn't go as well. Anyway, I'm not a bad guy, I don't think. But I'll go with Steve Levy, Dan Orlovsky, and Lewis Riddick. I'd probably go just two-man booth, personally. I think they should keep it simple. I think you're getting the mistake of trying to break in a three-man crew, especially on national TV with the scrutiny they have. And I think two is easier. That's what I would say. They're looking at Kurt Warner as well. Nate Burleson, I think they're looking at, but I doubt CBS would let him out of his deal. And I'm not sure. He wants to be like an entertainment guy. I don't know if he wants a job. So that's what I'll go with.
All right.
But I think they should do one or the other. I think you go Riddick or Orlovsky. Yeah. What do you guys got? You guys, you know,
we're just following along with you, Andrew.
Whatever you write, we believe.
So. I like the idea of Lewis Riddick. I also like hearing these weird like packages that NBC or ESPN are maybe going for, and it's like a new package in 2022, and then just get with some wild boosts there. Just like throw anyone out there. Stephen A. Smith, why not?
Oh yeah, if it switches. Well, yeah, if it switches like network or CBS loses it, it goes someplace else, or they only have one game. Yeah, that would be fun. That'd be probably give you guys some fodder for me to report on and you guys to talk about.
I guess my one take then would be you, as you reported, that they had a chance to counter offer and get Breeze in their building. How much money, I know these are very strange times right now, but how much money the difference was compared to what ESPN is as this, you know, giant of the industry. Just do the deal. That's what I'm thinking. And then you have your guy and you roll the dice and maybe you get a Romo-esque guy. But I understand the other side of two. Wes, I think you disagree with me that you maybe throwing just a ton of money at a completely unproven guy is a recipe for disaster.
Well, I was more like thrown off by Greg saying Stephen A. Smith, why not? How many why nots do you want? I could give you like eight. What? Don't put Stephen A. Smith in a football booth, first of all. Don't put him in any booth ever, but definitely not football, sport which he doesn't know and thinks Hunter Henry plays a totally different sport, is out of the league or whatever. Give me a break on Stephen A. Smith.
All right. Andrew Marchand.
That was pretty entertaining.
Isn't that what it's all about? Entertainment at the end. You can follow him on Twitter. He writes for the New York Post, and he's been doing great reporting in this field, which we are fascinated by. His friends call him Clicker. That's interesting. And if you do follow him on Twitter, I just want to mention something. This coronavirus tragedy is touching everybody. It hit the New York Post. in a terrible way over the weekend with one of your great photographers, Anthony Causey, who passed away, and just tragic as a family. And I saw that you had pointed to a GoFundMe page to help support his family, which is obviously a very good cause. Sounds like a really sad moment for everybody. It was one of those guys, it seems like, Andrew, that everybody loved, which makes it hurt even more.
Yeah, it's been a heartbreaking day for us. Started late last night or early last night. And Anthony, you know what? If you have that friend who kind of always makes you smile, always trying to do something good. He was a photographer. And not only with like celebrities like Derek Jeter, which he had great relationships with, but, you know, we're hearing stories about so many people that, you know, there's one story about this couple that got engaged in Central Park, and he was just walking in there and took a picture of them, took their names down. I mean, that's special. And he's much too young, 48 with two young children. So it's very sad. And, you know, like everyone's telling, I'm sure you guys have been preaching this, stay inside, because, there are a lot of numbers out there. And when it doesn't hit home, but this one, obviously, for all of us, really hits home, even though New York and the tri-state area has been really hit hard. This one for us has been heart piercing. So I appreciate you doing that. Anybody out there who can contribute, it's appreciated by everybody.
Yeah, head over. We'll retweet it from the Around the NFL handle, and you could check out Andrew if you want a spot there, the GoFundMe link. Thank you for coming on, Andrew. It was great having you on, and maybe we could do this again as the world turns. Now that soap operas are drying up, this is like the new one that I enjoy the most. This is my All My Children, and you are like you're the script doctor behind the scenes in a lot of ways. Not that you're making up the stories. You're just digging them up.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Maybe I'll make up a couple to make it more interesting.
All right, cool. Say hi to your brother for us, Andrew Marchand. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, there he goes, Andrew Marchand. I'm just going to say his name quickly because I still don't really know it for sure.
Marchand.
There you go. So that was interesting and enlightening. I'm excited to see what happens next in the booth. We have more guests coming up, by the way, later this week. I'm very excited about this. Kyle Brandt is making his Around the NFL podcast debut, the great Good Morning Football host. I think we all have a lot of respect for Kyle. So he's going to come on the show, and that will be fun. And we might even have another guest. It's going to be a big week, another big week for the Around the NFL podcast in the bunkers. You guys excited?
Yeah, it feels like we should have maybe had Kyle Brandt on 7 or 8 times by now. So the box needs to be thoroughly checked here.
Yeah, I agree with you.
He's a busy man.
He is. He's a very busy man, but he's making time for us.
His day usually starts before the COVID sheltering at what, 2 in the morning our time or midnight our time?
Yeah, well, they're still shut down Good Morning Football right now. But yeah, he's one of doing those morning shows is absurd, the hours. Is that what we want? Do we want a morning show one day? No, we should do a late night show, right? What would our choice be?
Let's shift to 24/7 at this point. I mean, we were doing 3 episodes a couple of months ago. We're now doing 5 or 6. Let's just go 24/7.
All right.
When if you have to step out and tend to a child for 5 minutes, that's fine. But you just the screen stays on.
I don't think you should say that out loud. You just put the idea into the air. All right. This is Dan Hansen signing off for the Quiet Storm, the mailman, the old boss, Rick Hollywood, in her apartment. On to Tuesday.